Hello, welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast with me, Alice Arnold. This week, we are going to hear from a new up-and-coming writing duo, and they are enjoying their first West End success with The Secret Diary of Adrian Mole, aged 13 and three quarters, and they came into the studio for cakes and a chat. They are Jake Brunger and Pippa Cleary. Welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast with me, Alice Arnold. This week, I am talking to the writers of The Secret Diary of Adrian Mole, who are Jake Brunger and Pippa Cleary. Welcome.
Hello.
Thanks for having
have
us.
Have you enjoyed a little Italian thingy?
Cannolo.
With...
Oh, delicious. Thank you so much. That's made my day.
I'm saving myself after this.
Oh. Well, anyway, there's quite a few there. You see. I do like to give people a little snack, cake, something, before we start. Now, you met, you're very young. You look probably even younger than you are, but you met at Bristol University. Tell me, how was it like fresh as fair?
I met our director, Luke Shepherd, in my first year of in our halls of residence, would you believe? And we sort of did a few shows together, West Side Story. And I'd always said to him, I'd love to write a musical. I'd done some stuff at school, you know, and he had met Jake previously because they both studied drama and I studied music. And basically, to cut a long story short, we got some amazing funding to take a show to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And Luke had this idea because we were doing a show called I Love You, You're Perfect Now, Change with a university cast and crew. And he said, well, why don't we also just write something new? And, you know, because we've got no risk here and we can alternate it day one, off and on. So he basically put me and Jake together and said, you've got 3 months to write a show. We've booked the slot. We've paid the fees. got the house. Off you go. And from thence, it all began. And that was 11 years ago.
Yeah. And I remember, because it was already booked, it was called Jet Set Go. And you also
musical.
Had to write your blurb about what the show was about before you've even written it.
Right.
And I remember going into the practice room at Bristol University Music Department and meeting Pippa, and we just had to do it. And I remember our first session was disastrous. And
we decided we couldn't possibly work with each other.
We were very polite. Yeah. We were very polite with one another because we didn't know how we could be. And I remember the second session, from then on, it was like shouting, screaming, banging the floor, banging the piano. And that's been like that. No, we've got better lately, but
what,
for
shouting
a long time,
and screaming crossly?
No, in a passionate way.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yes, crossly as well, I'm not going to lie. But but it's always about the work. You know, our process is, I think, very unique because we write lyrics together. So Pippa will sit at the piano, I will stand at my laptop, and then we will record our session. And this is how it started, you know, all these years ago. And we will just, Pippa will start playing.
Voice memos didn't exist, remember, back
That's
in the
true.
Day.
Yeah,
I don't know how we managed the first few years.
So you write the music and the lyrics at the same time?
It depends. Sometimes we do, or sometimes I'll write the music and we'll kind of scat kind of dummy lyrics, like literally, oh, the park to the shop we go and the pig, and, you know, things that fit and rhyme so that you've got, and then later we'll update the lyrics. Sometimes we have the lyrics first, and then sometimes we'll have a tune. It's kind of all three, but yeah, we're very in the room together. But actually, just thinking back to that first moment, we're talking about how disastrously the first meeting went. We're so lucky because we basically had to learn to collaborate when we were 21. And collaboration is everything in musical theatre, because up to that point, I'd only written music on my own at school and I'd done my stuff. And
I'd written scripts.
He'd written some plays, and you don't have anyone else to question things. And then the first time someone's like, well, actually, I'm not sure about that. You're like, oh. But actually, that is the number one skill if you want to work in musical theatre. And I think some people come to it later in life, you know, novelists, whatever, playwrights and fantastic writers and composers, but that haven't collaborated in that way. It can be a bit of a baptism of fire. So we dealt with that early.
So I guess this is a very long way around your question, which is that we met at Bristol, but having met really young, it's true. Like the paper says, we didn't have any filter of, oh, well, I'm a grand composer and I'm a grand playwright. It literally was like, you've got 3 months to write a show, go. And it's kind of been like that ever since, for 10 years.
It was student stuff, and now it still feels
and we
like
have that
student
that lovely
stuff,
shorthand maybe. With Luke Shepherd as well, who we've obviously worked on and off with over the last 10 years. And he's had a fantastic career doing amazing things with Matilda and all sorts. But yeah, to come, the three of us still have that kind of banter shorthand that we established at university, which we're
and
really
is very
grateful
much misconstrued for. It's like siblings. Like,
you can hear we interrupt each other already 5 times in this interview. So yeah, imagine the three of us all together.
Right. So you had Jet Set Go, which was Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. Then you were commissioned to write an adaptation of Enid Blyton's Mallory Towers.
Yeah, we did. That was a mad sort of 6 months.
How did that come about?
It was a year and a half.
Was it a year and a half?
Yeah.
Don't fight.
I know. Thank God you're here. So the producer, David Pugh, who had produced Calendar Girls and God of Carnage and the play what I wrote, literally spotted us at Edinburgh. It really was one of those, you know, things. He came to see it with, bizarrely, the dramaturg, the literary manager of the Royal Court, which was so surreal, coming to see our show about Cabin Crew. And actually, I did get into the Royal Court Young Writers Group off the back of that. But he said, like, look, have you ever thought about Mallory Towers? And it really fit what we were, the kind of thing we did. We did a workshop. Theo Sharrock directed it. It was glorious. But there's a long, complicated story behind the rights of that show, which I won't bore you with. And it's happening actually this summer, but not with us anymore. It's happening with Emma Rice. But we're not. We had a lovely time working on it. And
oh, it was glorious.
Yeah. And I'm sure that one day those songs, well, actually, some of them we've already recycled, picked up and put into other things.
Oh, right. Okay.
We're not supposed to admit that. Shush, they all come from original.
No,
place.
Have you read Andrew Lloyd Webber's autobiography?
No,
but it's
we watched
on my
the documentary.
List.
Yeah.
You need to read it because there's, if you know lots of his shows, which I'm sure you do because you're musical theatre fans, he talks a lot about taking songs from one show and putting them in another and saying, well, that show didn't work, but we used that opening number and we stuck it in Cats or whatever. I mean, it's just really, really interesting.
I will quite proudly admit that I do the exact same thing. Yeah. It's not a secret. There's plenty of songs. If something hasn't worked or is not going on and it's a great tune,
Why waste it?
If you're forcing something that shouldn't be, then that's a different thing. But if it actually is appropriate, it's lovely to recycle things, and then your good melodies, you know, they don't die. So I'm fully supportive of that.
So the Secret Diary of Adrian Mole. I mean, this is now in the West End. So this is your
dream come true.
Yeah.
Right. This is the big success. This puts you on the map. Now
you've just quoted the show there.
Yeah. That's what Adrian, in his "I Want" song, he says, it'll put me on the map.
Sorry to interrupt you. That was quite fortuitous.
Yeah. I have seen the show. I knew that, obviously. How did it all happen? How did the Adrian Mole thing happen?
It's such a lovely story, I suppose. I'd played Adrian when I was 13. I'm from Nottingham. My whole family is from Leicester. And years later, we were at Pippa's house, Pippa's parents' house, which is where we used to write in London when we first graduated. And they had a copy of Adrian Mole on their bookshelf. And I just sort of thought, well, we're from very different backgrounds. And the fact that I had been an Adrian and come from the East Midlands, and Pippa's family grew up in London, but they still had that book. I was like, wow, this is a book that speaks to everyone. So we did a quick rights check, and the agent said, there's a very short window of 3 months that the film, there's going to be a film of Adrian Mole, but it looks like it's collapsing. You can pitch the musical to Sue Townsend. And so we did. We wrote a 10-minute pitch. We got on the train and went to see Sue. We played her the first 10 minutes on spec, you know, just as a pitch. And we finished, and she said, well, where's the rest of it? And we said, well, that's it. She didn't realise it was just a pitch. She thought we'd written the whole thing.
Right.
And she said, well, go and write the rest of it then. And she sold the rights the next day for £1.
No, did she?
That's what we just wouldn't be here if she hadn't. That is so generous and unusual, you know, because there was no, at the time we were 24, 25, and she, there was no way we would have been able to afford however much would have been for the rights to that kind of title. But I think she just kind of liked us, and we were a new generation coming to the book, but we still related to absolutely everything in it, and we were really passionate. So yeah, she could not have been more generous, and we are eternally grateful to her for that.
Mm. And she worked with you quite a long way through the process, didn't she?
She had been a playwright, you know, for much of her career, lots of plays at the Royal Court Theatre and in the West End. And so she had that dual thing of being appreciative of what theatre was and that it was a different medium to novels. So she was, you know, arm's length when she needed to be, but if she had specific notes on this character would not say that, or don't like this turning point, or you know,
there was lots of red pen, wasn't there?
Yes. And you know, but she was just fantastic. She was, considering that book is her greatest gift to the world, she really was quite chilled. She was just a chilled, she was chilled person. She
kind of, and there are bits that we've elaborated on and sort of done our own thing with, and she was, she had read and loved the sort of, I would say, one of the drafts, which was before she died. So she'd seen a kind of very, very early workshop and really loved it. And there's nothing since then that we've dramatically altered. No. So I think we had her blessing on the show pretty much.
And if anything, since that originally, we've always gone back. Whenever we've had problems, we've just gone back to the book because the lines are so golden. Why would we not?
And sadly, she did die just a year before it opened.
And we'd seen her few weeks before. We'd had lunch at her house, and she was, you know, she was just such a great,
lovely person.
Yeah, she was. You can't say a bad word about her. She's she was amazing. Yeah.
Well, you've given the gift of the show back to the people in the West End.
Hopefully. And, you know, it's been, it's amazing that the book still does live on and still, you know, actually when she did pass away, you know, the tributes that came in from people like J.K. Rowling and David Walliams, you know, she meant so much to so many people. And that book still speaks to the real 13-year-olds that we have in the show. It's timeless. It's a really timeless book.
Yeah, and it speaks to the 13-year-olds in the show, but also to the adults in the show who are thinking back to those days. I mean, I found the whole, the parents, the divorce of his parents, incredibly moving. I mean, that song, I Miss Our Life.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, that really got me. I love that. Mm. But it is also quite crazy, the show. Is that? I don't know what word to use.
Zany.
I think it's when all the grown-ups came in their school uniforms.
Yep.
I thought, oh. And the whole nativity scene. Yeah. I mean, you know, barking, basically.
Yeah, completely.
I think it's just...
But it's wonderful. It's joyous.
Thank you.
Crazy.
It's that thing of, you know, it's just a great meeting of Pippa and I's... That is...
And Luke's.
And Luke,
styles.
Yeah, of our styles. And with Sue's.
Yeah, Luke's signature, the sort of directorial style, I would say. He's so brilliant at, you know, the without giving too much away, there's a lot of push and pull with the set and sort of things popping out of things and going into things and... It's so inventive and it's so different and sort of it just makes it a bit more quirky and unique, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think part of the reason that sort of it is a bit quirky and zany and you could say hyped up in a way is because Adrian is such a melodramatic personality and everything is seen through his eyes. So it is all awful or brilliant or dreadful and, oh, there must be a big song now. And everything is bigger, you know,
because when you're
13... Everything is a drama. Yeah. So we kind of went with that. And so therefore the whole show is a bit weird and wacky and moves at a right old pace.
It certainly does.
The company have a lot to do.
Yeah.
there's no let up for anybody, but no, it's joyful.
But because it's seen through his eyes as well. So for example, when his mum has an affair with the next door neighbour, that song is this kind of fiery Latin number where they end up, you know, sort of all over the living room together. Because that style suits, you know, and also the end of Act One, for example, which is a revolutionary against the head teacher song, a bit like, you know, that classic trope in all sort of books and films. It becomes this Les Mis style revolutionary number for a reason. Like we've not just plucked that out of nowhere. It's because that's what he feels. If he had a musical of his life, that is
he would have a revolution.
Yeah.
And of course the central character is Adrian Mole, 13 3/4. How do you find your agent? You know, you've got central characters to this, very central characters who are very young actors.
Yeah.
So how did you get, and lots of them playing it because of the equity rules that children are not allowed to perform more than however many times a week. So how did you go about finding your Adrians and your Pandoras?
I think there were 290.
Was it that thing? Yeah,
it was a lot of auditions. And but Luke is so brilliant at kind of making the kids feel comfortable and sort of auditioning them in a way that's not sort of intimidating and just playing around and trying different groups with different groups. And obviously they had to learn bits of the songs and scenes. But it was really lovely. And actually I could see sort of selfishly how much they were enjoying the material and they were sort of giggling at the lines and... It really was hard.
Them, yeah.
Of course, it's hard to have to whittle it down. But we have 16 in total, four teams of four children. And
bizarrely, with Adrian, because there are four teams, all four teams of all the characters are completely different. There is no stock type. So, like, often when you go and see a lot of the children's shows, you know, there is like, Annie is going to have that short ginger bob. With this, there is. Every Adrian is like seeing a different show. And that's why I think make what's so exciting for us as well as writers and for the company, the adult company who do have to do it, you know, four sets of rehearsals and dress rehearsals, etc. They get a different performance each night, especially in, like, I'm thinking about our bullies, for example, the four, Barry Kent, the mean bully who steals 20 pence from him. You would not put those four children next to each other and say, you're all playing the same role. And I love that because it means they bring different things to the role too.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Yeah. And there are some... scenes for the children, and they are children, that might be quite embarrassing for them.
Oh, yes.
How did they cope with that?
I remember in a dress rehearsal in Leicester, the girl playing Pandora has to kiss Adrian, and she ran off stage in the dress rehearsal and fell into giggles with the chaperone and said, that was my first kiss.
And then that happened again with one of the Adrians 2 years ago.
Oh, really?
I remember we were running the show, and actually quite a few producers had just happened to come in that day. It was one of those slightly more big fish people are coming to watch the run sort of thing. And there's this kiss and it was the first time they'd done it. And then he sort of came off and went bright red and said, that was my first kiss. And then no one could hold it together after that for 5 minutes.
But
yes, you're right. It's on a knife edge of sort of, we're catching them at that point. You know, we couldn't cast them any younger, you know, but we can't go to any older because of the sort of voice breaking issue and things. So, but they do literally grow up through the course of the rehearsals and these shows and they're asking questions and it's lovely to watch.
And they are also really mature. I think, you know, sometimes we forget that we're in the presence of 13-year-old kids because they're very worldly and also a lot of them have come from the theatre. They've done a lot of professional work and there's that horrible thing about people think that kids are stagey and that they're, you know, if they've been to Sylvia Young, they twirl in the room and they don't at all. They work so hard because they have to go to school every day at 8:30 do a whole day or a morning at school, come to the show. They don't get back home till midnight. They actually work harder.
They're such troopers.
And it is an interesting age because I wonder if 13-year-olds now are more mature than 13-year-olds were then.
I wouldn't necessarily know if they were more mature, but they definitely have a lot more information. Mm-hmm. Obviously, at their disposal, so therefore possibly things will be more in their heads than at our generation. And yeah, it's managing that. And again, Luke Shepherd is really fantastic at just talking to them about everything and going through, just making sure that everyone knows what everything means and just sort of making everything in a safe space. And I think all the kids are actually so comfortable with each other. And I think there isn't any sort of awkwardness or issues. And the chaperones as well, like they know what they're doing to make it really good.
But it definitely is life imitating art because they are going through, you can see the throes of, between them, and they're getting Rufus, one of our agents, said, "Oh, I'm getting loads of spots on my face now."
did
you
say that?
Yeah, he really did. Yeah, that's what happens under the sweaty lights.
Now, it's set in 1981, which is obviously before your time, a long time before your time. It's very nostalgic for those of us in the audience that because before the play starts, I got there quite early and sat and listened to 1981. In fact, we were going, "Where's this come from?" 1981. and then it was all 1981. So how did you make sure you got, because you're such a young team and you're a director as well, so how did you make sure you got that right?
Our parents, particularly Pippa's mum. So we often do a lot of writing at Pippa's.
My mother is the unsung hero of our relationship. Yeah. She sort of becomes the
mediator.
If we need to check a historical fact, a grammatical error, a sort of would this person of at this time have said that? We have a sort of plethora of people that we
email all the time.
And then Tom Rogers, of course, the designer, who is phenomenal, has just done such an amazing job with all the props and scenery that sort of do make the audience think that they are literally, they've been transported back. Which is really, really lovely.
There's a lot in the book as well, and we didn't want to make it so alienating. So, for example, there's a reference in there to Esther Rampson. I don't know if you picked up on that. And so I thought, okay, who is still relevant now that was still around then? Is around the time that she was doing That's Life? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, That's Life. It was
I don't,
called
don't
That's
even know.
Life.
I know, sorry. But when we did...
Listen, I used to know John Tiedemann quite well.
So Esther Rampson, we picked her purposely because we thought, okay, she spans both eras. And in the auditions, these kids said, "Do you know who Esther Rampson is?" And one child put their hand up and said, "Is she a famous poet?" And another one with Charles and Diana.
Yeah, some of them didn't know, but
they didn't know
13,
who they were. They did not. They hadn't heard. Someone, one of the kids said Charles and Dee when he was reading the script.
Oh, really?
Dee,
they didn't know that.
And we said, "Di, that's Diana." We said, "Do you know who that is?" And he said, "No." They were born in 2006, these children. She died in 97. But they could all relate to the royal wedding because of Meghan Markle's wedding last year.
And Will's and Kate.
Yeah. So they get the...
These things come back.
Because the royal wedding forms a big part of the show at the top of Act Two. So, and that's what I mean. There's a timelessness to this stuff that, so although Adrian and Nigel look at a copy of Big and Bouncy magazine stolen from his dad's shed, that's no different to really a kid getting up an iPhone now and saying, "Look at this, look what I've seen." So even it just... that's where the timelessness, I think, comes from, the subject matter here.
So now this is your first work that's been in the West End. Yeah. Are we talking to the new Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber here?
Well, do you know what? We've not arrived from nowhere, I suppose, is the kind of... We did two shows on The Fringe, which has started out, which is how we got the job for Adrian Mole.
I think we've counted eight or nine shows.
Lots of kids' shows in Singapore. We've done three shows in Singapore. We've done a show for National Youth Music Theatre here. So there is that awful story, isn't there? When people say it's their big... Or they've come from... We haven't. We've grafted over 10 years.
Yeah, and then you have
that.
The breakthrough. Yeah,
and then this is the, and the I think what also feels lovely, but also slightly strange, is sort of everyone's kind of congratulating us now, but actually we wrote the most of Adrian Mole 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Then we made some tweaks the Curve version, and then it transferred to the menu. We added a new song, Misunderstood. But the bulk of our work was done 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And of course we're still always noting and sort of tweaking. But, for me, it's music I don't even remember writing. Like, it's such a long time ago. And we've got other projects going on now. Which hopefully all of them will transfer to the West End. it just takes that long. Musicals take time and workshops and tweaks and all the sort of politics of the theatres and the creative teams and getting it all right. So, but we couldn't be more thrilled. We're finally here.
And in answer to your question, in terms of us as a partnership, we definitely work on separate projects together. A lot at the moment, Pippa's doing her own stuff, I'm doing my own stuff. But
he's writing movies.
Movies now, darling. But we have actually we're just about to start our own. We've got a TV show in development, the two of us. And because a lot of TV companies are really interested in musicals at the moment. We're talking
oh,
about...
Okay. Okay, a film. Musical television.
Yeah, which is very, you know, because there's a show in the US called Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which sort of, and obviously the Australian show, oh, what's it called? Oh, it's gone out of my mind. What's that Australian show? Oh, no.
I don't know. I don't watch Australian shows for young people.
But yeah, well, and, you know, when we have a new show as well that we've been writing for the last 6 months on attachment to the National Theatre, which we've just come to the end of a draft of. And so, yeah, we'll do our own things every now and again, and we'll have a little bit of time off because it's quite intense working together. But we'll always come back together.
And, yeah, and sometimes we're actually literally about to go away on one of our retreats. We go to my parents' house in the New Forest. Again, my mother looks after us, cooks for us, and dramaturgs the work and breaks off the... Gosh, we're not that bad. So that's lovely. And yeah, sometimes we have these intensive periods, and then we'll have the periods where we'll do other things. But no, we love working together. And I think we also really, you say the new Angela Rowe and Tim Rice, not so much, but we really love to champion new British musicals because it's just really hard. You know, if you look at the West End now, you know, it's 90% is American stuff. And so anything we can do to help move those along, we will do.
There's another way that you differ from Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice is that you can actually perform yourselves because I've seen it. Yes, I've seen you on YouTube. I've seen you on YouTube performing a song from Adrian Mole.
In Crazy Cox.
And actually, do you know what? This is a really name-dropping
story. And you
story.
Were both amazing.
Well, thank you
And
very
you both
much.
Properly sing.
Well, I can't
and
sing.
This
act.
Is, we normally, yes, you can.
The spiel that we always give when we do our pitches to producers and directors and things is, hi guys, we're going to sing the song. Pippa can't act and Jake can't sing. But between the two of us,
we put a crosser.
But
actually, you say that. We did, in order to get the show to the Menier Chocolate Factory, Adrian Mole, we had to sing... Pippa and I, and act every single role, just the two of us, around the piano to the producer, David Ian.
And his 40-person office, who had all taken
behind.
The Friday afternoon off, sitting there with gin and tonics, like, looking sternly at us, what have you got?
And Pippa, you're playing the piano.
I'm playing the piano.
I'm singing all the parts.
It was one of the most... scary 3 hours of our life.
I went home and ate McDonald's and passed out. I was so nervous.
But we are used to performing.
But we did, this is a lovely story, we did perform at a gala last year, bizarrely. We got invited, we couldn't believe it. On the bill was like Clive Rowe, Janie D and us. It was absolutely hilarious. And we performed a song. And afterwards, this woman came bounding up to us. She said, I absolutely love that. I'd love to work with you. And we realised it was Caroline Quentin. And we didn't realise at the time that she started out in musical theatre. She has got the most incredible voice. I mean, she did My Girl a couple of summers ago at Chichester. So we have just finished workshopping a show with her, and fingers crossed if we can get it all together and aligned in the right place. But, you know, so that was a really lovely evening of being like, well, actually, maybe we should do this more often.
So is the next thing an adaptation or is it
The next thing is an original musical, which we probably can't say very much about because nothing's sort of confirmed yet, but we are really excited about it. Can we talk about it?
I guess we can. Yeah. I mean, but again, it comes back to that thing of, you know, we are passionate about British stories and British, and why shouldn't we write an original story? I think in America they have that absolute, you look at things like Next to Normal and Fun Home, and I know Fun Home is actually a bit based on a book, but Next to Normal isn't, and Dear Evan Hansen isn't. These are original ideas, and I can't tell you how hard those are to get off the ground. Yeah. We're sort of saying this flippantly, but
to get somebody interested in producing.
You know, it's a shame that over here we don't have, in the way that we have a huge subsidised market for, you know, the subsidised theatre industry, it rarely gets behind musicals. They don't treat the musical in the way that America treats the art form. You know, even with Mole, we've seen it, we're treated as a mainstream commercial show. It's not, it's not that necessarily. But yeah, so the new show is an original story, inspired by a series of letters written by a family friend of Pippa's about her husband who goes into a care home with Alzheimer's. And it's basically about what happens to her on the outside and how she attempts to live her life. And it's got comedy elements to it because she's only a 63. She's an absolute, the woman that it's based on is absolutely hilarious. And as we sort of started going to research for the show, so she meets somebody in the show whose wife is in the care home. And I did not realise that it's also John Suchet's story. It happened with when his wife Bonnie was in the game. He met another. And then as we started to tell people about this project, lots of people came crawling out the woodwork and said, this. And so I've met loads of people since and we've interviewed people. And it's about finding love in the hardest of places.
Well, I think that's so relevant now, isn't it? And,
absolutely,
you know, now that we, you know, so many people, I mean, my generation, so many of my friends are dealing with this with their parents.
But we just
so, I mean, I think so. all of us, every generation is dealing with someone who's going through some form of some, you know, whether it's your father or your aunt or, you know, everyone. I think it is something that's not spoken about. But, and especially the story of the spouse of the person who has Alzheimer's. Mm. It's not actually about
the husband. It's not about the Alzheimer's, it's about the carer.
The guilt and the feelings of, can I move on in this state of limbo? How much time should I be devoting to him? And how much of my life am I allowed to leave? You know, it is touching. So anyway, we've just finished that, so we're waiting for the next.
And we just did the workshop, and the workshop was, I think it's 6 to 8 actors over the age of 60, and we had the most incredible room of people. They'd all known each other for 30 years, and they gossiped like no one's business. But they all said they are so behind it because they don't get castings anymore. You know, they go up for like Grandma and, you know, Billy Elliot or those kind of things. They were like, here is a story that is not treating our age group. And also there's no cynicism in why me and Pippa have written it. We've not gone, oh, let's write a sort of, you know, grey pound piece at all. We just love that age group. We felt like, why aren't people writing for these people? That's also the theatre going audience. So we're really excited about it, and hopefully it'll come out at some point.
So now you say you do individual projects and then you come back and work together. Mm. Have either of you gone off, because I'm obsessed with Love Island at the moment. I know it's not really. I'm not the target audience, but I do love it. I literally am so obsessed. Want to know if either of you, you know, like Dana Curtis, or, you know, have you gone off with someone else and written with other people and not told each other?
No, it's all out, we have an open relationship. I've written a few musicals, none of which have actually gone on yet in the last couple of years with other writing teams. And some of those projects are still sort of pending.
I'm doing a couple of jukebox musicals at the moment, which obviously have pre-existing songs, so there's no place for Pippa, which is sad. Yeah. But definitely there's, you know, this is the thing. At the moment, I think we're hitting a new stride of, hey, do you know what? We can do our own separate projects, but when we come back together, our voice together is very...
It's very unique. Yeah. I don't write the same songs with other people. And that's what's really lovely. And also, to be honest, I think we established sort of 4 years into our relationship. Obviously, you can tell we're quite fiery. If we spent 9 to 5 every day together of the year, we probably would kill each other. So we need to have that time sometimes to breathe and come back together.
When we write together, we only ever do 4-hour sessions, so 9 till 1 or 2 till 6 in our days. We actually, thankfully, we live up the road from each other, which is handy. But we just learn over the years that 4 hours together, the intensity of what we're even how we're talking now is the lowest energy we get.
Four hours is long enough working day for anybody.
We're about to go for another 4-day retreat, and those are always 24 hours.
They are 24 hours. and then we start at 10 in the morning. We usually go till like 1 but we take breaks and walks and exercise.
Very disciplined of you, though. Anyway, what musical theatre? What show has inspired you the most?
Me, personally, Billy Elliot. I love that musical so very much. And I think it's because it's so well written. And people might not necessarily know that it is. I mean, the numbers are so finely structured in between the dancing and the storytelling and the lyric writing. And it's just such a brilliant story. And the story is at the heart of it, which we always try to aim for. We don't ever just write a song because, oh, let's have a fun song here. It always has to serve the story and there has to be a reason for it. And I think it's such a great example of that. And it's a very brilliant British show again. It says this is gritty, this is British, this is not a Disney's fantastic kind of, you know, lots of chandeliers.
Interestingly, with Billy Elliot, actually, you can't really take those songs outside of the show. They don't really stand well in cabarets. There's no big ballad and we're kind of the same. We struggle with this. We don't really seek out that cabaret circuit a lot because our songs, we got a couple in Age of Mold that do stand alone, but they've always got character names in them. We don't write, you know, they're very specific. For me personally, it was The Witches of Eastwick, which was when I was 15. I had an obsession with it. I saw it 6 times. And the actress Rosemary Ash, who played the best part in that show, Felice Gabriel, we then cast in Age of Mold. And she's since become a really close friend. But really, it was her performance in that show that was, you know, I realised I wanted to write those big, funny, comedy, monstrous characters that are just really fun to write.
Well, is this transferring to Broadway? Do we know Adrian Mole?
That would be interesting to see how it went on Broadway. But Americans are currently flocking around, which is interesting because there is, you know, they love British things over there. And also because
it's certainly British.
I mean, you never know, as they would say on Love Island. Never say never.
I know. Well, good luck with Broadway or wherever it goes, or the next show, which I can't wait to see. That sounds really, really interesting. Jake Brunger and Pippa Cleary, the writers of Adrian Mole. Thank you.
Thank you.
you enjoyed that podcast, why not download some of the other ones we've done? You can find them all on the website. And if you did enjoy it, you can also rate us. You can do some, I don't know, something where you say you really liked it. Give us a review. All that stuff. Feedback. That's what we want.
People say when they start planning a remodel, they say, I don't even know where to begin.
But that's where we come in. At Simple Bath & Kitchen, design is the fun part.
We walk you through styles, colors, and layouts right in our showroom so you can see your new space come to life.
And once you love the design, our team handles the rest. On time, on budget, and with zero pressure.
Beautiful designs, smooth process.
Visit simplebathandkitchen.com to start your design today.
We make it simple for you.